again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday. John Coy is our guest this hour. John says we have done boys a fundamental disservice by failing to publish more books that address their genuine interests. Go into any classroom and ask boys what they like to do, make a list, and then take that down to the library and see how many chapter books and novels you can find on these topics. The gap is huge. John, for quite some time, has helped to fill that gap. He is the author of a number of books for young people and for young adults. He's coming to the Neenah Public Library in August to do a writer's camp for middle schoolers and also a parent educator program on boys and literacy. The title is It's Boring, Boys and Reading. It's going to be on Wednesday, August 5 at 6:30. John is a Minnesota author who writes both young adult novels and picture books for children. His latest book is published by Scholastic, and it's Box Out. He is author, I'm sure some of you are familiar with these books, Two Old Potatoes and Me, which is a Reading Rainbow selection in 2003. A lot of his books are sports and coming-of-age theme novels for young adults, and he's won lots and lots of awards for the work that he is doing. So, boys in reading this hour, it should be a really good hour. We welcome your phone calls. 800-486-8655 is the number. 800-486-8655. And if you want to send an email, you can do that as well. That address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. John is joining us by phone from Scotland today. Hello, John.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great.
Good. Thank you very much for being with us. Where are you in Scotland?
I'm on Loch Bay on the Waternish Peninsula.
Ah.
Up north, looking out at the Hebrides.
Oh, isn't that nice? Writing a novel, maybe? Writing a book for young people, boys?
That could come of it, yes. That's possible.
Yeah, I'll bet that it could. You know, I was amazed. You tell this story of going to a bookstore, summer reading program, books are in the window, and when you go in, all the books are for girls. What a striking thing that must have been for you.
Well, it is, and I think anybody who's spent some time in a bookstore will see this phenomenon that, you know, if you go into a children's bookstore and wait until a man comes in with a son, you can wait a long time.
Really?
These bookstores know what they're doing. They know who their customers are. And women buy many more books than men, and that's true of girls versus boys as well.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of the things we see, you know, all across the line on publishing and reading is this discrepancy.
You talk about walking in, if a male teen did walk in and looked at that table, he would think that summer reading was just for girls.
That's right. That's right. The table I was talking about said summer reading for teens, and there wasn't a single book on it that, you know, had a male protagonist set in contemporary times. Even the covers, you know, it was Gossip Girls and Traveling Pants and stuff. And I think too many teens do get the message that, you know, reading, you know, may be something that's for somebody else.
Mm-hmm. You talk about, you've gone to very many schools. You do workshops, you're a writer. You say that you're struck by the enthusiasm of students in a first grade class who are learning to read, and by that you mean boys and girls. And then you go back to school and look at the same students in fifth grade, and there is a marked difference.
That's exactly right. I mean, I think anybody who works, you know, in younger grades knows about this excitement when kids are learning to read. It's like a secret code, mm-hmm. and kids are deciphering it and learning how to read their name, and there's just a buzz about that. But if you go into a school and see some of those same kids 4 years later and you ask them how they feel about reading, you will have many kids who say, I don't like to read. You will even have a number of kids who say, I hate to read. And, you know, when you ask that question, by the time you get to I hate to read, that's predominantly boys who are saying that.
Mm-hmm. That must just hurt you to hear anybody say that. I hate to read, because you know, well, first of all, you're a writer, but secondly, how important it is to read. You'll get farther in life, as the old Dr. Seuss book goes, if you read.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that. And I think as true as that was in the past, as true as that is now, it's going to be more so in the future. I mean, you know, there were, I mean, I grew up in Eau Claire. I went to high school in Eau Claire. And I can remember when I graduated, you know, we had some guys who weren't strong readers, but you could go down to Uniroyal and get a job making tires and be paid well. Those jobs are gone.
Right.
You know, those jobs aren't there anymore in, you know, city after city in Wisconsin. And so, you know, my concern is if somebody is a, you know, as a fifth grader or an eighth grader or a 12th grader is saying, I hate to read, my concern is, you know, what are these guys going to do for work? What opportunities are you going to have if you are not a good reader?
Right. And you talk about, tell me why this is important, because there are a couple of places that I can't get out of. One is a bookstore. I can't leave without buying things. I spend hours in bookstores. Plant stores is another. But I've always brought my son to bookstores. And when he was young, it was real easy to get him to, you know, pick a whole selection of books. Now I'm thinking, as a teenager, it might be better for his father to take him to a bookstore.
I think that's exactly right, Kathleen.
Really?
I think one of the things that happens with reading is the people who tell boys that reading is important are usually female. And so when boys are young, that's fine. They'll hear that and believe that. But as boys get older, if they're hearing something just from their mothers or just from female teachers or just from female librarians, there's some boys who are skeptical of that if they're not hearing that from men. And I think with reading, I think it's an area where men just have not shown up in taking the lead and letting boys know reading is important. You know, if you talk with people in their families, plenty of families, it's still the mother reading to the children. The dad's not doing that. So I think that, yeah, I think a father taking a son to a bookstore, I think that's a huge statement. I think that's a huge statement on the part of the father. You know, this is something that, you know, that's important. Let's go down to the bookstore. You pick out something that's interesting to you rather than me saying, this is what I think you should be interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, that's something that doesn't happen very often. And it would be great if it happened a bit more.
And what about this modeling behavior? If you do have a dad and a mom, but a dad in, particularly in this instance, who is an avid reader, and you have a lot of material around the house, magazines, books, etc., is that enough for boys to become interested in reading just to see the modeling behavior happening?
It's huge. The NEA did a study a while back on the decline of reading, and there were all kinds of dire warnings in that. But one of the interesting things that was tucked away in that is they broke reading down by socioeconomic level. And people from higher socioeconomic levels had children who read at higher levels. But they broke it down also by how many books were in the house. And they divided it between houses where there were 100 books or more in the house and houses that had fewer. And what was interesting was kids from poorer backgrounds, if they grew up in a house where there were 100 books or more in the house, they were reading at a higher level. Just having those books around does a huge amount of kids seeing their mom or their dad reading it. And, you know, kids get bored. If there's books around, eventually they'll pick up a book and start reading.
Right. When you talk about going to a bookstore and dad and son are looking at books and the dad's not saying, this is what I think you should read, the son is saying, this is what interests me. Tell me about boys' genuine interests. You know what they are, but I guess the publishing world doesn't seem to know what they are, and many other Americans don't know what they're interested in.
Well, I think the way to find out is to ask. And I think, you know, part of what happens is, you know, in school, we all have a hierarchy of what are good books. And if you look at, you know, for most people, what is at the bottom end of that, you know, what are books that aren't considered good? And, you know, you look at all-star wrestling magazines and comic books and, you know, maybe Captain Underpants and stuff. And then you realize, oh, all that stuff down at the bottom, that's stuff that's popular with boys. And in contrast, you know, it can be, you know, very easy to say, you know, this is a great book. Everybody's going to love it. Everybody's going to love Little House on the Prairie. Well, there's some boys who read that book, and they don't love it. And it's too easy for them then to say, oh, this is a great book. I don't like it. I must not like reading. Mm-hmm. Boys have that ability to go to that side real quickly if they're not interested in something to dismiss it. But I think when you talk with boys about what they're interested in, a lot of boys really like nonfiction. A lot of boys love a book like Guinness Book of World Records.
Yes.
There's a librarian, Earl Clare, who told me this story about how when he became the middle school librarian, he realized all these boys were coming down to look at Guinness Book of World Records at lunchtime, and they were just library copies. And he said, why are these library copies? I'm going to buy a bunch of these, and boys can check them out. And he said those books have been some of his highest circulating books.
Isn't that interesting?
So I think the most important thing is to talk with boys and girls and say, what are your interests? What would you like? And then if you can guide that student to that book, the transformation can go the other way. I mean, I get letters and emails regularly from people who say, I don't like to read, but I read Top of the Order, this new middle grade novel that is just out, and I really liked it. And it's almost like they feel compelled to tell me that they don't like to read. I'm amazed at how many kids identify themselves as non-readers. And even when they're reading a book and then writing me a note to say they liked it, they're still saying, I don't like to read.
Hmm. What about the Harry Potter books? Was there a delineation along gender lines for those books, more girls than boys? Or it's striking to me that I know an equal number of young boys and girls, actually, and old boys and girls, too, who have read those books and seen the movies, et cetera. What did that do for the reading divide?
Oh, those books were just huge. I think we may never see people lining up at midnight to go get a book the way we did with that series. And she did do a terrific job. She very deliberately tried to write something that would appeal to both boys and girls. It's a challenging thing to do. I mean, publishers often have a sense when they're choosing titles that this is a book that will appeal to girls or this is a book that will appeal to boys. But with Harry Potter, she managed something that was just amazing.
Mm-hmm. We have a number of people who would like to speak with you, so let's take a few phone calls now. And John Coy is our guest. John is going to be doing a special workshop in Neenah for parents and educators. It's Boring, Boys and Reading, and it's going to be on Wednesday, August 5 at 6:30 at the Neenah Public Library. We'll give you a phone number for registration as we proceed here. John joining us by phone from Scotland today. Let's go to Frank from Madison for our first call. Hi, Frank.
Hello.
Hi,
very interesting
Frank.
Topic, and I hope your guest enjoys the locale. Beautiful place.
Thank you. I love hearing Kathleen say, join us by phone from Scotland.
Right.
That's never happened before for me.
Society has occurred. And I suspect that it's a post-war phenomenon in the English-speaking world because traditionally, and I believe this was the case for someone of my vintage, that reading is a high-status masculine activity. And something you were expected, and not class delineated. There was a strong B-literate culture that was working class based, both in the United States and in Britain. And so, how did masculinity drop literacy? And I definitely remember that Kim was accessible to me. The White Company was accessible to me. Novels about teenagers engaged in the American Civil War were accessible to me, and they had been written for teenage males. So what happened, and why should reading, which became more feminine with the emphasis on the novel and fiction, why should it have been feminized? So thank you very much.
Thanks, Frank.
Yeah, Frank, that's a terrific question. I mean, there is a whole book in the answer to that question. I think a couple of things that happened in the last, let's look at the last 25 years. And if you go and you look at reading levels, one of the things that seems to jump out is that boys aren't doing dramatically different than they were 25 years ago. What has happened is girls are doing much better. Girls are just on a tear. And so this gap we're talking about, it has developed not because boys have fallen off the cliff. You know, we always had boys who weren't, you know, the strongest students or didn't spend a lot of time reading, you know, outside of school. But because girls are doing, you know, girls are doing better, we're starting to see this gap. And I think, you know, when you're talking about, you know, how did masculinity drop literacy, I think that part of it is, you know, these models. And I think that, you know, we've, you know, there are lots of boys who do not come from households where they have a male reading. That's not something they see. And so they need to see this someplace. And there's all kinds of boys who are in schools where there are not many male teachers at all in the younger grades. There's not many male librarians. And so they need to see this modeled. I think that's part of it. The other thing is I think we have defined reading rather narrowly. I think the emphasis has been on, you know, great novels being great reading. And I think as we broaden the definition of what reading is, more boys are able to say, well, I'm a reader. You know, I may not be reading, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird, but I'm reading other things. And I think it's essential that we broaden that definition of reading to include more people in.
Mm-hmm. A friend of mine who recommended you for this program actually said she had read your book, Crackback, and I know her pretty well. She says, I read his book, Crackback Me, a sports book, and was really absorbed by the story about a young football player feeling pressure from his father, his coach, and his peers, and facing tough choices about performance-enhancing drugs. Talk about a topic that would really appeal to young guys, a lot of young guys, not everybody, of course, but to also look into the angle of morality and performance-enhancing drugs, et cetera. You're trying to change all of this by finding something that would be interest to boys and then looking at peer pressure, et cetera. That's good, John. That's good.
Well, you know, what's interesting, Kathleen, is, you know, I wanted to write a book about high school football because I'd played high school football in Eau Claire. And so I wrote that book, Crackback. I've been amazed at the response to it. And part of where that response comes from is there aren't that many books about high school football. Mm. You know, and you think how many kids play high school football, but that's not reflected in what we have for books. So I think that part of that is, you know, when you, you know, we don't have, you know, we don't have as many men writing for, you know, for teens and young people. We certainly don't have as many publishers. If you try and get a book accepted in New York that has sports in it, you run into a real strong bias because most of the editors who are making decisions on that not only did not play sports when they were younger, but a lot of them have really negative views about sports in general. And so there's just a higher threshold to get over sometimes with getting a book like that accepted. Once the book's out, readers find it. You know, these football players, you know, they're finding Crackback. This new book, Top of the Order, this came about because a publisher, an editor who has a son, was concerned about what her son was going to be reading in the middle grades, meaning like third, fourth, fifth. And she approached me and she said, will you write a series that is, you know, that is targeted for boys? She said, we've got lots of stuff for girls right now. We don't have as much for boys. And I kind of went back and forth a little bit about it. I hadn't written anything for middle grade, and I wasn't sure about committing myself to a series. But then I realized it would be absolutely hypocritical to talk about this and not,
right,
you know, not,
yes,
you know, take a stab at writing something for this age. So that first book, Top of the Order, came out this spring. It's published by Fywell and Friends, and it's going to follow 4 10-year-old friends as they make the transition from fifth grade to middle school.
Wonderful.
And that's the type of thing where, you know, I just wrote about 10-year-old friends based on, you know, what I remember, based on what I see, based on talking to kids. I've talked with kids and asked them for feedback on this manuscript. And, you know, it's a surprise to me to realize there's, you know, there's not as much of that out there as I think there should be.
And what a perfect thing to write about. Where else are you going to find the transition to middle school series? That's just great, John.
Yep, and I remember that as being just huge. It was huge for me, and it's still huge for lots of kids.
Yeah, it's a very hard transition. I think middle school is, God bless the people who teach in middle school. That's all I got to say. It's not easy. Let's welcome more phone calls for John. Our number is 800-486-8655. John Coy is our guest, and John is an author, award-winning author, presenter, and educator. He is going to be at the Neenah Public Library on August 5th. You want to carry on this conversation and live in the area, 6:30 p.m. It's Boring, Boys and Reading. And he will be answering the question, why boys don't like to read, and talking about what he's doing to change all of that. And others are as well. All right, more phone calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to more phone calls now, and Lisa from Menominee is next, John. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
Hi.
Interesting topic, especially for a mother and stepmother to nine boys.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. You're kidding. I guess.
My husband is about 14 years older than I am, and we were in a waiting room in an office just the other day, and he was thumbing through a Highlights magazine to the Goofus and Gallant cartoon, which he said was always his favorite. And he was recalling titles from his childhood, like Boy's Life and Ranger Rick and even Mother Earth News. And I'm just wondering what the author, what your thoughts are on the shift in periodicals that are available for young boys. And even, you know, we've heard a lot in the news lately about the impending demise of the American newspaper and how iconic that is for men my husband's age, you know, growing up having a paper route and watching their fathers read the morning paper. And I just like to hear his thoughts on that, and I'll take my feedback off here.
Thanks, Lisa.
Well, thanks, Lisa. That's a great question. I think so many, I'm 50, and I think so many men my age, one of their introductions to reading was dad reading the sports section, and then being old enough to, you know, read box scores in the sports section and you know, looking at that in detail. The number of kids now who live in a house where there's no newspaper is enormous. So I think that was one of the ways reading was modeled. People would read the paper. They'd get the paper and they'd look through it. I think there's a big shift happening. Both newspapers and periodicals. So many magazines are having a difficult time too, as things go much more to being online. You know, when people are reading online, it's interesting how we sometimes don't think of that as reading. You know, I think that's part of that sense of broadening our definition of what reading is. I'd be curious, I wish we would have talked with Lisa a little bit about what she's seen with those nine boys in terms of what are some things that have grabbed their interest. Because right. I think different kids, you know, are interested in different stuff. But as we said before, if you find the genuine interest of that kid, a lot of times it just makes a huge difference in terms of their interest in reading.
What do you think about competition things for boys? Libraries having, you know, sign up for this and you get something if you read 10 books over the summer, or parents compiling reading lists for their boys saying you'll get some kind of special treat, or even I'll pay you to read books. Are those effective kinds of programs, John?
Well, I think one of the things that's happened, Kathleen, is in the last, let's say, 20 years, one of the things that's happened, I'd say a couple of big emphases has happened in schools. One of them has been a huge emphasis on safety. If I go into school now and I think about what used to be outdoors for us to play on at recess, almost all that equipment is gone because it was, you know, considered too dangerous. I think the other thing that's happened is there's been a big, big emphasis on cooperation rather than competition. And I think with those two things, I think there's some boys who like a little bit of element of danger in their play. And there's plenty of boys who like an element of competition in their learning.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've emphasized cooperation, I think there are some boys who they're just not feeling quite as excited about that as the motivation versus, you know, having some kind of competition.
Right.
And if you hang around boys, it's just absolutely amazing how they will turn the smallest thing into a competition.
Yes,
you know,
right,
absolutely
right.
Ridiculous things. but that's a big part of kind of how a lot of boys operate. And I think that parents know their they know their children. They know what are ways that are motivating. It would be great if we just had everybody reading because of the love of it. But that's not true for every kid now.
Right. I think that competition is a big thing, and then they make reference to each other. If somebody wins it, I always, as a girl, I'm thinking, why do you lord this over somebody? But it's just sort of part of the banter that goes back and forth.
That's absolutely right, and there are some schools now where that is really, really considered problematic. Any kind of competition, I think there needs to be a balance with that, of course. But I think that that there are ways. Whereas we don't have as many male teachers in education, where sometimes we're not having a full debate on some of those questions.
Right. Well, there's another point. I think we need more male teachers.
I do, too. I do, too. And I think if anybody would have told me 25 years ago, let's take two professions that traditionally have been female, teaching and nursing. And let's say in 2009, which are going to have a bigger increase in men, I don't know if 25 years ago people would have said it'll be nursing.
Right.
But that's happened in nursing. It hasn't happened in elementary education.
Hmm. Let's go to Judy from Hilbert next. Hello, Judy.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Hi.
And to your guest.
Good morning.
I'm familiar with Jeff Willems. I don't know if you are or not. He wrote a book called Reading Don't Fix No Chevys.
Yes, that's a terrific book.
Right, and he did follow the largest longitudinal studies of young men. I don't know how many he had in his study, but it was like more than 12, where he followed them from middle school to early college. And they were a wide range of socioeconomic from inner city to Harvard college prep kind of kids. And they wanted to get the attitudes that they had toward literacy. And so in order to do that, he made up a kid, and he said that he was very, liked to read, helped in the library, was very literate. And they asked the boys to comment on this kid. And to the young man, no matter what their background was, they totally honored him. And they said, well, they thought he was really good because he was competent. He needed to get some friends, however, and have a social life. And I think Willem's study kind of showed, he pointed out, I don't have all the notes with me, but that boys honor competence, and that competence is very important. And so even teaching young men to read, if we show them that they're not competent in the early stages, it tends to shut them down at those early stages.
I think that is an excellent point, Judy. I think that's exactly right. And I think one of the things that's happened in education in the last 10 years is there's just been a huge emphasis on testing. And boys know automatically where they are in the hierarchy. So if they're not testing well, there's all kinds of boys who just say, what's the use? And they give up. And we've got to find ways to reach out to those boys and get them involved. And just the title of that book you're mentioning, Reading Don't Fix No Chevys.
It's a great
and
title.
I think the subtitle is Literacy in the Lives of Young Men, says a lot. Mm-hmm. That's the way some boys view reading.
Right. Thank you, Judy, so much for your call. We go to Mike next from Milwaukee. Hi, Mike.
Hi, don't you think that... Isn't this a hormonal problem? This is a problem in biology, and not to demean anything you said, but why are we trying to change boys into girls? I mean, does it make sense to you to allow people to grow up, and if they get serious about reading, they eventually will, and if they don't, they won't?
Well, I think that the evidence is that if students are not engaged in reading at a fairly young age, that a lot of times they never do get engaged in reading. School gets more difficult as they go on. I do think you're on. I have no interest in changing boys into acting more like girls. I think one of the things that's worth taking a look at is how much of an emphasis we put on sitting quietly at your desk for reading and how many boys struggle with that. I was in a school a while back where a researcher from Mayo Clinic was doing something that he called Classroom of the Future, and he invited me in, and he said, why don't you come down in during reading time? And I went down during reading time, and the first thing that was noticeable was there were no desks in the room at all. Each kid had a laptop. But during reading time, if you were a kid who liked to sit quietly, you could go into a corner and sit on a beanbag chair and read that way. But there were a number of kids, they were all boys, who were walking back and forth across the classroom.
Really?
Reading during reading time.
Huh.
So I think there is, you know, I think there is something to that. But I would, you know, I would really hesitate to identify reading as a female activity, because I think that narrows down what opportunities we have for our boys way too much.
Sure. Thanks, Mike. Let's go next to Peggy from Manitowoc. Hello, Peggy.
Hello. Hi. I'm coming from more of an educational point of view because I am a middle school teacher. I teach sixth grade, so I can identify with the issue of boys not wanting to read and saying to me, I hate reading, which it breaks my heart when I hear kids say that. But what I've tried to do and what I know that works best is to offer lots and lots and lots of choices. And I'm able to do that because I built up a large classroom library, but I know for a lot of schools that's a budgetary issue. And our students are allowed to go to the library, but it's a block of time, 15 minutes. So really, as you get into the middle school, you lose that library time. You don't get an opportunity to browse and look at different books. And then the last thing that I want to say is things that I've noticed boys reading. They love to read lots of military books, stories by Rick Riordan, Percy Jackson, and the Olympian series. That's a great series that the boys seem to like. Chris Crutcher has some great sports-related books for kids who are in the 7th, 8th, 9th grade level. So there are books out there. Just got to look for them, got to talk them up, and I'll take your comments off air.
Thank you. Thanks, Peggy.
Thanks, Peggy. I think you're exactly right about the choices. I think providing students choices makes a huge difference. And I also think you're exactly right about library time. There's too many schools I go into now where they don't have full-time librarians anymore, or the library position has, you know, been cut altogether. And that makes a huge difference. That's a way where, you know, students can go in and find something and say, this looks interesting to me. And I agree with those authors you said. I think those are authors that a lot of boys are really interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And girls as well. I think the other thing that's important to say here is, you know, we've known for some time that, you know, girls will read books with, you know, male protagonists, and boys sometimes have a harder time doing that, reading about books with female protagonists. You know, so I think there's ways where, you know, there's ways boys learn more about girls when they read a book that has a female protagonist, too.
Why is that, what you just said?
I don't know. I think there's something interesting. I was in a school in New Richmond a while back, and it was, the fifth grade teacher told me she'd done something really interesting. She'd split up her class for reading groups, and she had a boys' reading group and a girls' reading group. And what she had discovered that was really a surprise to her, first of all, the boys were much more willing to talk about the books when it was just boys. But secondly, they were willing to read books with female protagonists. And she thought there was something when they were, you know, when they were together where they just kind of had an automatic response of almost feeling like, you know, that wouldn't be cool to do. But she said she couldn't believe how much better the discussion was when she was, when she just had those boys for the book group. And I think there's something really interesting in that. I think some of it may be, just how kids are socialized. It may be just, you know, needing somebody to say, you know, here's a book and, you know, have a, you know, have a group of boys read it and have them be amazed at how much they like it.
Mm-hmm. We go to Kathy from Oshkosh. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thank you very much for this program. My son is 19. He's been a non-reader since we finished the Harry Potter books. We read them, the three of us together, his dad and I and he. Our problem still is he's in college now, and I read for him. I read to him. He's an excellent auditory learner. He can survive, but we've had books in the house. We've gone through evaluations of this person, and I know you're addressing younger boys, but at this point, what do you do for someone like him?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, congratulations for, you know, finding out a way that works for, you know, for how he learns. You know, we're talking about this idea about broadening our definition of reading. I think another way this is happening is with books on tape. You know, when you see people walking around with, you know, listening to something on their iPod, it's not always music. There are plenty of people who are listening to books on tape. There are a lot of people who go through a lot of books by listening to them. You know, historically, that's a, you know, that's a way where people, you know, where people were exposed to a book by listening to it. The other thing I think, you know, what you're talking about is different, you know, different people have different styles of learning, different things that they do well with. And I think that's something that, you know, everybody has to identify what it is for themselves of how they learn. But, you know, it sounds like, you know, that there was a time when he was enjoying those Harry Potter books. I think that's important. At 19, we don't always see that initiative on reading. But sometimes if a kid who really did enjoy some books when he was younger, that will come back in the 20s. So I would say, you know, that's still possible.
Is there a bibliography you could recommend?
There are some bibliographies, yeah. There's some, if you enter, you know, if you go onto Google and say boys and books bibliography, you will get some things. There's also a website called guysread.com that has a list. Some of the books that we've talked about earlier in the show are on there. And then the other thing is just identifying what it is your son's interested in and excited about. And, you know, look, you know, under those topics. Or, you know, give him a gift card to a bookstore and let him go in and find something for himself.
Sure. Thank you so much for the call. We need to pause for a moment. We'll return. John Coy is our guest this hour, award-winning author and educator. His books include Night Driving, Strong to the Hoop, and Crackback, and many others. Trying to figure out what the latest one is. What's the latest one, John?
Top of the Order, Kathleen.
Thank you, John. Top of the Order is his latest book just published. He's going to be at the library in Nina, the Nina Public Library, on August 5 at 6:30 to present this. It's Boring, Boys and Reading. Many boys don't like to read, and the question is why. It should be a great conversation and an evening. And if you'd like to get more information, go to the ninalibrary.org. There's more information there, or their number is 920-886-6335. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Coy joining us by phone from Scotland this morning. It's nice to be thinking about talking to somebody in Scotland. Pretty place. Our number 800-486-8655. Just a brief reminder that we're going to be in Appleton this Thursday, July 23rd from 9 to 11, broadcasting from the History Museum at the Castle. First hour politics. We'll look at the president's health care press conference and the economy tomorrow night, which we are carrying here on the Ideas Network. And then astronomy. The director of the Barlow Planetarium will join us the second hour of the program. They have a unique approach to learning about the cosmos. If you would like to join us, it's a live broadcast. It's $15, but you get lunch for that, not just us. You get food. That makes it all the better. 800-749-3906 to register. 800-749-3906. John Coy continuing with us now, and we'll go back to phone calls to Mary from Oshkosh is next. Hello, Mary.
Hi. My question, I have a daughter and two sons, and I find that my boys will only read nonfiction. They will read the history of the Cleveland Cavaliers franchise or something like that. You know, like, and my daughter will read all kinds of literature and fiction, and I can't get them interested in anything but nonfiction. Guinness Book of Records, you know. And I'm wondering if that matters, if there's something to be said for reading fiction and literature as opposed to fact, or, and also, is that a boy, typical boy-girl thing split? And it doesn't matter. And I'm just wondering what your guest thinks of that.
I think that's a terrific question, Mary. And I think that, you know, what you've, you know, what you've described for your daughter and two sons is something that, you know, is familiar to all kinds of parents. And I think we probably give boys the message that reading a book about the history of the Cleveland Cavaliers franchise, that that isn't that great compared with reading fiction. And I think one of the things that boys are really smart, they pick up on this. And I think there has been a tendency to say, you know, good reading is fiction, it's novels. And I think what happens if you have boys who are really interested in nonfiction and they're reading a lot of nonfiction, eventually they will find their way to fiction. They will, because fiction's fun. But they may go through a stage where they want things really concrete, really specific, and nonfiction provides that for a lot of boys. So I would say it doesn't matter that much whether it's fiction or nonfiction. What's important is that they have a positive association with reading.
Mm-hmm. I found that in my reading, that because of the nature of what I do, it is 99.9% nonfiction, and that's just fine. Vacations, you get novels, but it's okay. I feel like I love school. I feel like I'm in school all the time.
That's
all right.
A really good point to think of how much of, you know, of what you read is nonfiction, and you know, nobody's telling you that you should be reading a much higher percentage of fiction.
Right. No.
There's it's not, okay.
It's okay, and there's not enough time. It's okay. Thanks for your call. Let's go to Karen from Rolling Stone, Minnesota. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Kathleen. Wonderful program again. I had the great pleasure of hearing John Coy a number of times when I lived in Wisconsin, and I'm a retired teacher. He came to our little country school out in Downsville. And just gave the most amazing presentation. And I have to say, John, I have to mention your book, Roomaloom Zoom.
Well, that's very kind of you, Karen. And we were down at Downsville eating in the creamery on Mother's Day, and we made a point of walking by that wonderful school there.
Yes, and I have two points, and I'd like your comments on them. The first, I would certainly agree with the teacher who called in and said giving children choices is one of the huge keys. And when I was teaching high school English, I found two things. One, all kids don't have much time outside of school. They just say, I don't have time to do this. I don't have time to read. I'm in sports. I'm in this. I'm in band and so forth. And the second thing was a lot of kids who don't read as a hobby for themselves don't know how to choose books. They really don't. They go to the library. They just look at the shelves and they just don't even know where to begin. And what I started doing in my high school English classes, and I, for a while I thought, oh, I got to keep this a secret, was Friday was always reading day. Every single Friday, without fail, we never would miss. They could bring anything that they wanted to read as long as I said, I'm old and it doesn't offend me.
Yes.
So there was no pornography and that kind of thing, but They had the whole time to read, even when we went to 90-minute periods, which I didn't think some of them would be able to manage, but they did. And I found through that, I just would walk around the class and see what they were reading, and you could tell if kids were really reading a book or not that way. You didn't have to have them write a book report. And then I discovered that if I would give a book talk, maybe on 10 books I'd bring up from the library, every so often, you know, maybe once, twice a month, one little one-minute talks, then some of them would really want to try those books. And that once someone tried them and liked them, then they'd come back, you ought to read this. It's Oedipus Rex became a favorite book among boys. You've got to read this. He falls in love with his mother and he puts out his eyes. And another favorite among boys was Native Son by Richard Wright, which is long and
it's a great book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. No, and I think you're exactly right. That same reluctance that some boys can have with reading, if they read something they get excited about, they can become passionate about telling other people, you've got to read this, or what else do you have like this? That, you know, it's possible to swing this around and make a change. And, you know that. I mean, that's what, you know, what one of the joys of teaching is when you provide that for a student.
Oh, it sure is. Thank you, Karen, so much. A great call. Let's go next to Claire from Madison. Hi, Claire.
Hi there. I was wondering if your guest could address the issue of reading logs. I will say that for both of my kids in their sixth grade experience, and I know this goes on at other schools because I've talked to other parents about it, is this practice of requiring the kids to keep very detailed records of what they read, when they read, how much they read, and even the pages in the book that they've read was just a really major buzzkill for my kids who you know, just like reading for pleasure. And it's in the context of this sort of thing being done in not just reading class, but at one point my daughter was having to keep four logs. One for each of the music classes she was taking, or the practicing she was doing, one for Phi Ed for physical activity, and then one for her reading. I mean,
oh my gosh.
It's ridiculous, the documentation that these kids, and when you bring, you know, I brought this up to staff at the school, I mean, you just get this blank deer in the headlights look, like, you know, they just don't understand what you're talking about. And so, I don't know, I'm sure there's good ways to do reading logs, and or maybe not. I just wanted to hear a guest comment.
Well, I think that does sound like a bit of a buzzkill. And I think what our previous caller, Karen, was talking about having a time where students are reading and letting them choose what to read, I think that's a more effective way of doing it rather than feeling like, you know, you've got to put in this amount of time. That doesn't sound like a whole lot of fun. The other thing I think is really important is for kids to have a small amount of time every day where they are reading something for enjoyment. It doesn't have to be long. It can even be 5 minutes, you know, 5 minutes or 10 minutes, but something they've picked out that they like, because then they keep that association of enjoyment and reading. You know, as they get older and get so much busier with what they have to do and have so much more homework assigned, a lot of kids just stop reading for pleasure at all. And I think it's very, very important for parents to try and encourage kids to just keep a little bit of time each day for themselves for something they like to read.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your call, Claire, from Mount Horeb. Hi, Claire.
Hi. I'm really enjoying this conversation. I'm a fourth and fifth grade teacher, and I do have a lot of boys, and I really want to second a lot of the comments that I've heard so far. It's true that a lot of boys do love nonfiction, and if you think about it, one of the things that we talk about in education is we're kind of preparing them for careers. We want them to be well-rounded, but in the end, they're going to have a career, and a lot of careers involve reading nonfiction. And so, you know, when you're a lawyer, a physician, if you're in business, you're reading nonfiction. And so getting started in that, I think, is absolutely fine, and I think we shouldn't discourage it. And another comment I wanted to make was, again, with boys and sports, and I hate to make it so gender specific, but one of the favorite books that my boys have liked is called Necessary Roughness by Marie Lee, and it takes place in the Midwest, so the boys like that. And it's about a boy who came from California, who is Korean, and the only thing they play in Minnesota is football, so he has to play football. And it's a fabulous story, and a lot of my boys have loved it.
Hmm. Well, thanks. Thanks for that recommendation. I don't know that book, and I'll go out and get it to take a look at it. But I really agree with your comment on nonfiction. And I think, you know, just in the conversation today, we've got a sense of how, you know, there is a way where we haven't given nonfiction enough credit as reading. And I think that, when teachers do that, I think that they're going to find that that's going to make a difference with some of their students, particularly the boys.
Yes. Thanks very much for your call. John, the conversation can be carried on when you're in Neenah, right?
That's right. That's right. I'm going to be in Neenah, and I'm also going to be at the Oshkosh Library on August 5th at 2 o'clock, and we will talk a little bit about this as well as the process of creating a book.
Great. So Oshkosh on the 5th and Neenah on the 5th.
Yep, exactly.
All right. Thank you, John, so much for being with us. Really enjoyed the hour.
Thank you, Kathleen. I've had a great time.
Good. And he will be talking about It's Boring, Boys and Reading, Oshkosh at the Library on the 5th, and then Wednesday, the same day, August 5th, 6:30 at Neenah Public Library on Boys and Reading. So carry on with the conversation. Just want to tell you that our healthcare series, we just took one day off here for the healthcare series, and I'm going to be on vacation, so it will pick up. Don't you worry about it. We'll be on it more. August 10, healthcare series, and we'll be looking at the United Arab Emirates. Interesting place to look at, and also at France and other countries. And then we're having a major conference at Frederick Hospital on September 16th. You're invited to that. We'll have a good panel, a great panel, to talk about this very important issue. So thanks, everybody. I guess that's it. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour. Thanks to John Tretter for on-air production. This was a listener request this hour from Deb Andrews. Thank you, Deb. And we'll be back tomorrow on the Ideas Network.